Canada, the vaccine rollout has been met with lineups and wait lists. So for many people, it might be hard to imagine having more doses than people who are willing to take those doses. But that is changing. And in some places, it's already the situation. And there is a growing trend of incentives to entice people to get vaccinated, from free tickets to virtual events to retail discounts to cold, hard cash, like this in this Arctic community.
We have a bit of an incentive in Nunavut here, the hardest hit place in Nunavut, five people, and they'll be getting $2,000 each for a draw that they could enter when they get their shot.
And at the University of Lethbridge, another lottery.
The draw is actually for 9 fall tuitions. I think of this as one of the most important sets of scholarships that we've ever created, is to create a positive energy around vaccination.
Businesses are offering free beer, donuts, and all kinds of freebies to those who have been vaccinated.
With a vaccine, White Castle is offering free butter cakes on a stick.
That's the governor of Ohio, Mike DeWine. Nice of him to mention the free butter cakes on a stick. But in the next breath, he announced one of the biggest incentives going anywhere.
And the winner each Wednesday will receive $1 million.
Could imagine that might have a lot of people wishing they lived in Ohio. With me now to talk about incentives and vaccines are Timothy Caulfield, Canada Research Chair in Health Law and Policy at the University of Alberta, and Maya Goldenberg, an assistant professor of philosophy at the University of Guelph and the author of Vaccine Hesitancy, Public Trust, Expertise, and the War on Science. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Timothy, it's a far stretch from a free cookie, a butter cake on a stick, to a lottery for $1 million. What are some of the other incentives that are being offered around the world thus far?
Well, you mentioned beer very quickly. That's real. New Jersey had a beer and a shot campaign. You know, West Virginia offering $100 bond. You know, so you're seeing a lot of these different incentives. And, you know, there's some indication, there's some sense that they might be working.
There is?
Well, so look, you know, offering incentives for behavior change, the data, you might think it's obvious if you pay someone to change their behavior, they're going to do it. Behavior change is really, really tough. And so there have been studies with weight loss, there's been studies with exercise, with joining company wellness programs for eating better. And the data is kind of mixed. Incentives can work. And I'm a little more optimistic when you're not talking about sustained behavior change, which a lot of the studies are associated with, when you're talking about just doing this one thing. And there's a study from the UK quite recently that found, you know, adolescents had a pretty positive view of the idea of paying people to do this. And West Virginia is reporting there was an increase in interest, no surprise, right, in vaccination. So there is some, it's complex though, Matt. I don't want to say that the data is absolutely clear. I think if it is going to work, and Alex said this, Dr. Wong said this in his comment, I think we're looking at those who are, you know, complacent. You know, those who are hardcore anti-vaxxers, not going to change their mind. There's those who are complacent. And I also think we have to consider the downside. There are equity issues. You know, we want to make sure we're removing barriers. We want to make sure that we're incentivizing the right kind of attitude. You know, why are people actually getting vaccinated? So there's definitely complexities to it. But, hey, I'm open for ethical, creative ways forward. How's that for a
That's quite a needle to thread, ethical, creative ways forward in the vaccination program. Maya Goldenberg in Saskatchewan, this incentive is a bit more abstract. It's the promise of a return to normal life if a certain threshold is hit in terms of the number of vaccinations. Do you think that's going to be effective?
I think it could. It also wasn't exactly what I thought of when you say incentives. We usually think of individual incentives for the person to change their behavior. This is a collective promise, so it goes a little beyond what we usually think of as donuts and free stuff from Starbucks. What's exciting about it is it is actually pointing to the collective nature of vaccination, and that sometimes gets lost in conversations and communications around vaccines. The idea that it protects yourself, of course, that's important, and that most of the messaging around vaccines says that. But the real power of vaccines is in the collective protection. And this move by Saskatchewan is reminding us that we could do something together. And there's something nice about that I think could ring really true.
Tell me more about that. I mean, based on the work that you've done around vaccine hesitancy, how far can an incentive go in changing somebody's mind who is on that fence, as the premier was saying?
I confess I haven't looked at incentives specifically. What I have looked at are, so my work has been on pediatric vaccines. My work, I've looked at mandates around vaccines, and some mandates are you must do it or you, you're punished for not doing, but others just create structures around it where it's things like, well, you don't have to vaccinate, but if you don't vaccinate, you're not going to be able to do a lot of things. You can work in healthcare, but if you don't get the flu vaccine, you won't be able to work with patients. That's a common mandate around healthcare workers during influenza season. So no one is forced to do the thing that they may not want to do, but you create the structures in such a way that it becomes more and more difficult not to do it. So that kind of thing I'm familiar with, and that works really well, as long as it's not perceived as heavy-handed. So mandates, even the sound of it sounds like it's going to punish people. But if you create the structure such that it is far more beneficial to do the thing than not do the thing, people do respond to that.
Timothy, there is, we've talked about this before, the difference between people being vaccine hesitant and somebody who is just outright opposed to the vaccination process. What do you tell somebody who is either hesitant, or you used the word complacent earlier as well, what can be done to move them?
Yeah, I think it's really important, and Maya knows this so well. Not everyone's a hardcore denier, right? Those people who aren't getting the vaccine, many of them may just be somewhat complacent when you think about, you know, adolescents, for example. And I think it's that cohort that these kinds of incentives might have the biggest impact on. You know, so those hardcore deniers who believe in conspiracy theories, it's that we're not going to change their mind with a donut, right? We may not even change their mind with $100 or a lottery. But if you were someone who perhaps think, hey, I'm young and healthy, you know, why should I get this? These kinds of incentives might work. And I totally agree with Maya. I like the incentive when it's tied to that collective nature of why you're doing this. You know, you're doing this not just for yourself, but for your community. And if I could, I'll use a personal anecdote. One of my daughters goes to a school in the United States. She's at the University of the United States. And they used a version of the Saskatchewan approach that if we get over 90%, Matt, over 90% of the student body vaccinated, we'll open up the school. And it worked. And they also gave them $15 for a coffee or something, and it worked. And so if you're looking at that kind of population, this can have an impact. Mm-hmm. So, look, if we can even move it 1, 2, 3%, you know, that matters when we're trying to get to, stop community spread.
Maya, how does the idea of access to vaccines and the issue of equity of distribution play into this conversation? There are still, you know, large portions of the population where people are lining up for hours at a time, you know, all-night vaccination clinics, waiting on wait lists to try and actually just get the shot. They're not lining up to get a donut to get the vaccine. They're just waiting to get the vaccine itself.
That should be the number one priority. So before we start thinking about which incentives, it should be donuts, should be muffins, we need to be making sure that it's accessible. All these conversations about how to get those people who are a little bit reluctant cannot be done without making sure that access is involved. In fact, there's concern now that there's a tendency to start labeling communities with low coverage as vaccine hesitant when indeed they have an access problem. And those two, that's not a compatible way of looking at things. You can't talk about hesitancy unless access is fully there. So access should be the number one priority.
Timothy, what do you expect to see in the coming weeks when it comes to vaccine uptake in this country? We've just gone through a week of a, you know, what people are calling a communications debacle around AstraZeneca. And there are concerns as to whether we talked about this yesterday, whether this could lead to people perhaps stepping away from the line that they might have been in to get the vaccine. What do you think is going to happen when it comes to vaccine uptake in this country over the next few weeks?
Well, this is why I think this conversation is so important, because I think what we're seeing right now is this huge enthusiasm for vaccines, because it's all this individuals have this pent-up excitement about finally getting their vaccines. So that's what we're seeing right now. But we're going to start bumping up against the hesitancy hurdle, and I like to call it a hurdle because I think we can get over it. I think we're seeing that in other jurisdictions around the world, right? So I think we're going to start bumping up to it, and that's why we have to get creative. And I totally agree with Maya. Number one, remove the barriers, make sure there's equitable access. Let's normalize getting the vaccine, and let's make, if there are incentives, let's make them pro-social incentives that celebrate getting the vaccine and celebrate how important vaccines are to the community.
And hope. I mean, again, back to what we were saying with Alex, that if you give people, you know, the sense that the light at the end of the tunnel is closer and closer and closer, what does that do?
I love that too. I think Dr. Wong hit it on the head. You know, the if you have an incentive that is also tied to hope, to the future, to the light at the end of the tunnel, I think that you're going to see a little bit more of a positive attitude about that incentive, but also hopefully about vaccines.
Maya Goldenberg, do you think that Canada will hit a vaccination wall, and where would that wall be in terms of the number of people who, if we're trying to get to 70% or 80%, is there the possibility that we could hit a wall on the way there?
Oh, yes, of course, that's possible. I won't call it a wall. I actually liked the hurdle better. We're going to see it as we get into younger cohorts. So especially now, we're just on the brink of talking about vaccinating teenagers. And the question, there will be questions about, do teenagers need to be vaccinated to go back to high school in September? You're going to get some resistance there just because the decision making is changing as we get into younger cohorts. So we know that a teenager who doesn't have other conditions is not at the same kind of risk as people now, people let's say 40 and up. So there's going to be that complacency there, as was mentioned, and wondering if this is being done to protect older people rather than protect the teenager themselves. So that's where we need to emphasize the collectivity of it. It is important to get vaccinated in order to protect other people, though also to protect yourself. The messaging should be targeted at teenagers themselves rather than their parents, because teenagers deserve a say in this, and it shouldn't just be the decision of the parents for teenagers.
It's great to speak with you both about this as the process continues to unfold across the country. Timothy, thank you.
Thanks, Matt.
And Maya, thanks so much.
Thanks so much.
Timothy Caulfield, Canada Research Chair in Health Law and Policy at the University of Alberta. Maya Goldenberg, an Associate Professor of Philosophy at the University of Guelph and the author of a book called Vaccine Hesitancy, Public Trust, Expertise, and the War on Science. Your CBC News is next, and then...
There is not...